Morning. Greetings in Jesus' name. The one who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Thought it was interesting that Brother Marlon shared that verse this morning. That's the verse that we actually use to help pick the name of our church, the way of truth. It was that exact verse. It's interesting. Since then, when I meet people in our local town and they ask us where we're from or who we represent or what church we're part of, when I tell them that the way of truth, it's interesting some of the comments that we get. One older gentleman looked at me and he says, wow, you have quite an assignment there to live up to the name of that church. Well, this morning I had chosen to speak on the subject of walking in truth and didn't really make the connection that connects with the name of our church. But I like to speak on the subject of walking in the truth using a text verse found in John 3:21, where Jesus said, but he that doeth truth cometh to the light that his deeds may be manifest that are wrought in God. This was Jesus was speaking there to Nicodemus. We're going to look more at that chapter here in just a little bit. But our text verse this morning, I'm going to read it again. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light that his deeds may be manifest that they are wrought in God. So the question is, what is truth? You know, Pilate asked that question to Jesus, but sadly he did not wait for Jesus to tell him what truth was. Truth is a vast subject that affects us in every stage of life. Sometimes we say that people are not facing reality, okay? Whichever age, my dad is 83 years old, he has dementia, and he's still trying to live by himself, and we as a family tell him he's not facing reality. He needs someone to take care of him. And so, but that it can affect us in every age of life of facing truth, accepting truth, living in truth. And we could spend the next couple of hours actually having a discussion about what is truth, relative truth versus absolute truth. You know, there's some of those, I don't know how much you've discussed that in life already. What's relative truth and what's absolute truth? Or we could even discuss, does truth change over time? Does truth change? How can we be sure that we are believing truth? You know, how are we sure that we're living up to what is truth? Well, I believe that we are living in a time when truth is under attack more than maybe ever before. You know, in our Sunday school lesson, our focus was that Satan's forces vex the people of God. And one of the ways that they vex the people of God is he is the father of lies, and he tries to muddy the water to make it so unclear of what is truly truth. And we today live in a world like that. Yesterday, when I was on the Ohio Turnpike traveling here, I came up behind a truck, and in huge letters on the back of the truck, it said this: everybody has the right to choose their body. And then everybody was in parentheses, has the right to choose their body. Is that truth or is that false? It's false. That is not true. Then I came up beside the truck, and then all the way across that side was all about gender issue, and that's what they were promoting. You know, that's the world that we live in today calls that relative truth. I get to believe what I believe, and you get to believe what you want to believe. Whatever you decide is true, you can believe. For example, an example of relative truth is, that's fine if God exists for you, but for me, he doesn't exist. That's what the atheist would say. It's fine for you to believe that God exists, but for me, he doesn't exist. And that fits into the tolerant and open-minded society that we live in today. But upon closer analysis, that is not open-mindedness. That is foolish and ignorant. For anyone today, and I have no idea if anyone here today believes in the flat earth theory. But to me, you say, well, what's the big deal whether you believe that the earth is flat or round? Well, I'm going to tell you that it is a big deal. Because either the earth is flat or it's round. It can't be both. Okay? So, and the same is true. Either God exists or he doesn't exist, okay? So we have to wrestle with that. It is a big deal. The thing that, if someone tries to promote relative truth to you, tell them this one. Tell them that, okay, gravity works for me, but it probably won't work for you. Let's experiment here. So you go to the edge of the Grand Canyon. You say, I'm going to stay in here. I know gravity works for me, but it probably won't work for you. Try it. Well, that's the epitome of foolishness. Nobody in their right mind would do that. So why in the world would we do this in other serious matters? When God isn't focused, why would we say, well, I don't know if God exists? Well, brothers and sisters, there's people in our Mennonite churches today who are questioning the seven or the sixth-day creation. What Genesis says about creation, they're questioning that. Why? Why are they questioning that? Is it okay for me to say, well, I don't know, you can believe it that way, but I'm not going to believe that way. Well, brothers and sisters, there is truth, and we need to accept truth. There's absolute truth. Well, I'm going to tell you this morning, if you forget everything else that I say this morning, I'm going to tell you this, that truth will always be truth regardless of a lack of understanding, disbelief, or ignorance. Regardless what you decide, truth is not going to change, okay? Truth is not going to change. Truth is powerful. Truth is beautiful, and truth is liberating. But at times, truth is very elusive. You know, I have heard many people say, I really wish I knew what the truth of the matter is. As church leaders, we hear this side of the story, we hear that side of the story, and we just shake our head and say, well, I really wish I knew what the truth is. In business life, sometimes the same thing is true. People tell you these stories. They tell you why they can't pay their rent or whatever it is. And you say, I wish I knew what the truth is. Someone once said, if truth is white and lies are black, why does life have so many gray areas? Why does life have so many gray areas? Well, I believe the Word of God has the answers to that. I believe that it is when we are trying to not be completely truthful is where the gray areas come. There's a lot of reference in the Bible about truth. And I plan to look at some of this morning, starting in the Gospel of John. For you, those of you that have already turned to John 3, that's where I want to look at. I want to look at a number of verses here, but specifically our key verse, our text verse. I find it interesting that the word truth is used 27 times in the Gospel of John, more often than in any other book of the New Testament. The book of Psalms, I think, is the only one that has it more often. But again, reading our text verse, but he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be manifest, that they are wrought in God. The NIV says it this way, but whoever lives by the truth comes into the light, so that it may be seen plainly that what he has done has been done through God. There is no gray area in that verse, is there? The Amplified Version brings it out even plainer. It says, but he who practices truth, who does what is right, comes out into the light so that his works may be plainly shown to be what they are, wrought with God, divinely prompted and done with God's help. So I'm going to tell you this morning that if you are living in truth, you have nothing to hide. You have absolutely nothing to hide. Now let's look at this verse in the context which within it was given here in this chapter. I find it interesting that Nicodemus comes to Jesus at night, and notice the statement that he makes in verse 2. Let's read verse 1 and 2. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. Now he was a man of authority. He was a ruler of the Jews. And he came to Jesus by night, and he says this. Notice what he says. He says, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. So he was convinced, and I like how he says, we know. So I take it from that the Pharisees have had conversations about this, and they said that we know that this man must come from God because of the things that we observe in his life. This was a tremendously profound statement. And notice that Jesus answers him in verse 3. And I like how he says, verily, verily, I say unto thee. He He says this three different times. He says it in verse 3 and in verse 5 and in verse 11. The NIV translates that verily, verily, and it says that I tell you the truth. Jesus was saying, I tell you the truth. But in the King James, it says, verily, verily, I say unto you. And any time that you use that word twice, what it literally that phrase means is he says, believe me, this is true. I know this truth firsthanded. That's exactly what that phrase is meaning. So when, for an example, if you have been a personal witness of an event or something that's happened, you were there, you saw it happen, you know exactly what happened, then you could actually say, verily, verily, I say unto you, this is what happened. So this was Jesus was speaking to Nicodemus, and he was saying, listen, this is the truth. I am going to present truth to you in this statement. What is interesting is that Jesus is not merely aware of these truths. He's the author of them. Really think about that. Jesus is the author of truth. These truths that he was sharing with Nicodemus originated from him. And that is why Jesus could speak with authority. Mark 1:22 makes this observation about the teaching of Jesus. And it says, and they, the people, were astonished at his doctrine. Why were they astonished? Because he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Because he was telling them truth. He was speaking truth. And he had evidence to back it up. Because he was, in essence, truth in living form. Let's now jump down to verse 11 through 21 here, where Jesus continues to speak to Nicodemus. Again, notice verse 11 says, verily, verily, I say unto thee, we speak that we do know and testify that we have seen, and you receive not our witness. Again, notice the we. He's speaking the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. He says, we are testifying. If I have told you earthly things, and ye believe not, how shall ye believe if I tell you of heavenly things? And no man hath ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man, which is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. And now our key verse. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. I wish I could read these verses with the authority and the fervor that Jesus probably shared this with Nicodemus. I think if you really think about the purpose of why Jesus came on this earth, to help people find the right way. And so here were the leaders and the rulers of Israel were resisting him. But here, finally, one of them comes to him. And I think Nicodemus came in the right spirit. He truly wanted to know what was true. And so Jesus had this opportunity to share this. And he laid it out in such a clear way. He told him that truth and light are inseparable. That he that doeth truth cometh to the light. And that is so true. Truth and light are inseparable. And Jesus is clearly the author of light and truth. I would like to now contrast these verses with Satan, the father of lies. So we have Jesus, the author of light and truth. And Satan is the father of lies and all darkness. In John 8:44, Jesus tells the Jews that were challenging him, he turned to them and he told them, he said, ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it." You know, this is a very, very accurate description of who Satan is. He is a liar. He's the father of lies. He cannot speak anything but lies. Lying is Satan's primary weapon against the children of God. Lying and deception is his primary weapon. He uses this tactic to separate people from their Heavenly Father. Here are a few of his lies, just a few examples. There is no God. He tries to tell you there is no God. So guess what? You can be your own God. You can get to decide what's right and wrong. He said there is no moral law. You get to decide what's right and wrong. And if he can get you to believe those things, there's no end to the deception that comes with that. Or he says the Bible is outdated, or it no longer applies. Or when Jesus said that, he didn't really mean that. That's not really what he meant. Or the Bible contradicts itself. That if you compare some of these verses, if you take them out of context, they don't line up. Those are the lies that he tries to get us to believe. Or maybe he will even tell you that your good works are going to save you. He helps us to become self-righteous. Many of Satan's lies and deception tend to spread to others. We have an example of that in the Garden of Eden. When Eve was deceived, before long, Adam was deceived as well, or chose to go the wrong way. The same is true today. There have been countless lies and false beliefs that have spread all over the face of the earth. And I believe that some of the pressures that we are experiencing right now in the world that we live in, that truth is relative. Truth can be whatever you decide it is. Truth can be to your interpretation. I challenged a church leader here a while ago on a statement that he made. And do you know what he said? He said, you can believe that if you want to, but I'm going to believe this way. This was a Mennonite church leader. But you know what? It was a serious enough thing that either he is right and I am wrong, or vice versa. And it's a big deal. But that thinking is creeping into our churches. That go ahead and believe your way, I'm going to believe my way. But truth is absolute truths that we cannot negotiate on. Adolf Hitler, a man who learned to lie effectively, once made this statement: "If you tell a big enough lie and tell it frequently enough, it will be believed." You know, that's called propaganda. Okay, if you just keep promoting something and you say it powerfully enough and often enough and smooth enough, people will eventually believe it. So I think we can conclude that all lies, whether great or small, originate from one source, and that is from Satan. Revelation 21:8 lists off people who will find themselves spending eternity in hell. It says, "Those who are fearful and unbelieving, murderers, warmongers, sorcerers, and idolaters," you know, we're not that. But it says, "and all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire and brimstone, which is second death." Well, brothers and sisters, I'm going to present a very sobering truth to each of you. Every single person sitting in this audience has one biological father. Yes, maybe some of you are not living with your biological family, but you have one biological father. How many spiritual fathers can we have? We have one spiritual father. Either we are of the truth and we are walking in the light, or we are the devil and walking in darkness. Those are the only two choices. And I am very alarmed when I observe when we try to create a gray area. I'm not really in either kingdom. Is that possible? No, it's not possible. When I hear someone say, "Well, my life isn't what it should be, but I'm working on it," what do they mean by that? Which kingdom are you in? There's only two kingdoms. There's only two fathers and two destinations. What is wrong with when people struggle for years and years to overcome a besetting sin? Which kingdom are they in? What is wrong when people compromise when under pressure? Which father are they listening to? Are they listening to truth or to lies? I'm very passionate about this subject because I believe that it is imperative that we are in the right kingdom, that we are making the right choices, and that we're standing on truth, the absolute truth of God. Jesus is the author of truth, and if we follow him, we will walk in the light. Do we truly believe this? Did Jesus really mean what he was saying to Nicodemus? Did he really mean what he was saying? I believe he did. Absolutely. He was showing him the right way. Now for a more practical part of the message, I want to look at an aspect of truth that could make us squirm. And I make no apologies for that, because I need it in my life as much as anyone that is here this morning. I can say probably with confidence that every one of us here, or most of us at least, have been taught the importance of telling the truth and the serious consequences of lying. In my home, when I grew up, lying was not tolerated in any shape, form, or manner. When I went to school, you weren't allowed to lie. My home, where my children have grown up, lying is unacceptable. And even in the courts of our law yet, at this point, lying is unacceptable. If you're asked to testify in a courtroom, at least in Michigan, this is what they will ask you to say. They ask this question: do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God? That's what you're going to have to say to answer that question. And if you agree to those terms and you speak and you give a testimony while under oath and you lie, and they can prove that you've lied, that's perjury. That's a very, very serious consequences for that. My question for us this morning is this: why then are we so tempted to live a lie? Okay, we don't lie. But are we totally honest and transparent in our lives? We will never tell an outright lie, but we live a lie. Do you understand what I'm saying? Do our lives line up with what we say and what we live? You know, many people talk one way and then they live another way. They're like a broken circle. And their daily life is different than what they say. Somewhere they're not being honest with God and with truth, or else they're not being honest with themselves. Does this whiteboard work? I would love to put an illustration on the board. Is there a marker in there? So I'm going to make a circle. Which one of those is a circle? Will you tell me which one is a circle there? One on my left and one on my right. I think we all know. No, we all know the answer to that question. So I'm going to say that this one, what he says, what he does, what he says or what he does is what he is. I don't know if "is what he is" is a proper term, but I think you get what I'm saying. It all lines up. Everything is consistent. Now this other one says what he does and what he is do not line up. So that circle is incomplete. They do not line up. Now, that's maybe a crude illustration. But what I'd like to get us to understand and grasp in our minds is if what we do, what we say, is who we are, that's called integrity. That's called integrity. And I want to give you an example. When the Bible says that Job was a man of integrity, what did that actually mean? What did that actually mean? How did they know that he was under integrity? Well, Satan decided that if you put him under enough pressure, that Job would compromise. Did Job compromise? No, he did not compromise. Job was a man of integrity because what he did and what he said came out of who he was. Who he was. But when what we do and what we say does not line up, there's not integrity there. Some of you might have heard me tell this story already. A number of years ago, I was in Bangladesh, and we were trying to pick someone to become a manager for the SALT program there in the one area. And we were trying to figure out which man would be qualified. And so we were asking some of the local brothers there to tell us some of the character of these men. And obviously, there's a language barrier, and sometimes their terms are different than our terms. But one of them says that this certain man is qualified because he's the same in the front as he is in the back. Okay? And we chuckled. But what they meant is whether you're looking at him at his face or you're looking at him from behind, whether he's when you're with him, whether you're not with him, his life is consistent. He is a man of integrity. He does the right thing regardless who is watching him. I never forget that illustration. And guess what? He has proven himself over and over again to be a man of integrity. What he says, what he does is truth because that's who he is. That's who he is. Moving on. You know, we tend to tell ourselves lies who we really are. And oftentimes because we crave the approval of men. And if we allow that approval of men to really make an inroad in our lives, it will push us towards hypocrisy and projecting an image that is not true. When we're asked how we're doing spiritually, we have the right answers. We are trained on how to give the right answers, right? Let's just be honest. Yep, we're doing okay. Often withholding really what's going on, how we really are doing. In accountability meeting, we sit there and we try to find a convenient answer to answer that question so it looks good. Or we might be drowning in debt, but to the average observer, always well. Always well. They look at our lifestyle and always well. Why was Jesus so hard on the Pharisees? Because they were fake. They were hypocrites. They were not living in truth. They were looking for the approval of men. And in stark contrast, Jesus was real. Jesus was walking in the light, and that is why Nicodemus could come with confidence. And he could look at Jesus and say, "We know that thou art a teacher come from God." Because what Jesus said and what Jesus did lined up. His circle was complete. My question this morning, do we dare to be real? Is it safe to be real in our churches? Or have we created an atmosphere where we do not feel safe to be real? I have full confidence if right now this morning I would have a medical emergency, I would collapse on the floor, that you wouldn't just sit there and say, "Well, I wonder what's going on with him." No, you would do something, right? You would call the ambulance, or you'd come do CPR, whatever, you would get involved. My question this morning is, are we willing to do that with our brothers and sisters who have needs in their lives? Are we willing to be there and help them spiritually? What is brotherhood all about? I believe it's high time that we really think deeply about this subject. And I want to quickly look at 4 points on this subject. Number one, I believe we must create an environment in our churches where it's safe to be real. Do you think it was safe to be real with Jesus? I don't have time to review a bunch of the interviews or the people he spent time with. You know, when he sat there and he talked to Zacchaeus, and when he talked to the woman that was weeping and washing his feet with her hair, were those people real with Jesus? Absolutely. They felt safe in his presence. They could connect with him. They were real because Jesus cared about them. They were real with their questions and their struggles. Is that what our people find in our brotherhoods, in our churches? Do they find caring and understanding and compassion? Or do they feel criticized and judged and gossiped about? Now, I firmly believe that the church has a responsibility to hold people accountable for their actions. I absolutely agree with that. But with what spirit do we do it? Do we use mercy and truth? Do we try to find out what's really going on and help them? I believe it's of utmost importance that we as the Church of Jesus Christ create an environment where our people can be real. Which brings me to my next point. We must be willing to be real. You know, you can be in the absolute best church environment possible. And it's easy to blame the church leader and say, well, if they only would create a better environment, I would be real. You know, ultimately, we must choose to be vulnerable and real. Because as a leader, I can see some symptoms that are going on in your life, but only in part. To find true peace and rest, you need to be real and vulnerable. Humble and real, and share what's going on in your life. I want to challenge everyone, if you're struggling, please find someone to share with. Get it out in the open. The truth will set you free. Do we believe that verse? The truth will set you free. It truly does. The truth will set you free. I tell people, even my children, when they face something, they need to go apologize to their teacher or to someone. Just be honest. Own what you did. And you will be accepted, and you will be respected, you will be appreciated. And the same should be true in our congregations. When someone is man enough or woman enough to own what they did, we accept that, and the truth shall set you free. Number three, we must be honest with ourselves. This is a huge one. Sermons could be preached on this. There's books been written on this, telling yourself the truth. Are we looking at situations realistically? Are we honest with ourselves? The truth is that every one of us tends to have a slanted view of ourselves. Someone told me years ago, he said, if you really want to get in a very profitable business, you buy people at their real worth and sell them at what they think they're worth. Get what I'm saying? Yeah. We have an inflated view of ourselves. Just admit it. We all tend to be that way. But we need to face the truth. Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? You know, we need to be honest about that. The sooner we accept the truth of that verse, the better we are prepared to embrace truth. Another verse in Galatians 6:4 says, and let every man prove his own work. The Amplified makes it even clearer. It says, but let every person carefully scrutinize and examine and test his own conduct. Do we do that? Do we scrutinize and examine and test our conduct? We do it to other people, don't we? We test and scrutinize and examine their conduct. Why can't we do it to ourselves? Let's be honest that we need to do that. We need to be honest about our motives, our desires. And you know what? One of the best ways to do that is to allow someone to speak into your life. Allow them. Welcome constructive criticism. We all need it. Let's be honest. We all need constructive criticism in order to be realistic about who we are. And number four, we must be humble enough to accept the help offered. You know, many times I've seen people who finally admit they have a problem, but they want to be in control of the solution to the problem. You ever experienced that? I'm here to tell you that that doesn't work. If you find yourself millions in debt and the pressure is ramping up and the banks are ready to pull the plug on you, let someone else help you. Let someone help you. There is a solution. Don't just try to keep struggling along by yourself. Or if you have a porn problem or you have some serious problem in your life, let someone else decide which device you should be allowed to use, what filter you should use. You don't set the terms. You know, there's bitter pain and frustration in the treadmill that Satan wants to keep you on. Just try harder or make more money to pay that debt. There's a vicious cycle that just goes on and on. But often that vicious cycle spirals further and further out of control. Let's face reality. Let's accept the truth of the situation. Own the problem and accept help. Galatians 6:1 says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness." You know, sometimes I believe that we take that verse and say, well, that's for gross sin. It is for gross sin. But it's also for even other areas of our life. Why can we not recognize that when we need help, go to brothers that are spiritual and say, "I need help. Can you help me find the truth in this matter? Can you help me sort through these pieces and help me find the way?" Verse 2 goes on and says, "Bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ." There's such a beauty in allowing other people to speak into your life and help you see truth for what it is. In conclusion, listen to the words of Paul to the Ephesians. He says this, "But speaking the truth in love, you may grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another." Now, I don't know the context of the church of the Ephesians when Paul was writing this, but I believe that they were men and women very similar to what we are today. They had men and women who struggled with pride. They craved the approval of men. And they struggled with being completely honest with themselves. I truly believe that they were just like us, right? Living lives with integrity doesn't just happen. You know, we would love to just be men and women of integrity, but that doesn't just happen. Well, brothers and sisters, in our time era, I am convinced that we need to be committed to listening to truth. We need to love the truth, and we need to live the truth. All three of those. My challenge for all of us this morning is may we live lives that are filled with integrity. Because you realize that a person who is living the circle that I presented there, that is in stark contrast to the messed up world that we live in. When you meet a man of integrity that does the right thing consistently, he is the same in the front and the back. That is someone that stands out to you. That's a person you want to do business with. That's a person that you want to communicate with. With God's help, it's possible to keep that circle connected. As the proverb writer writes, "Buy the truth and sell it not." In other words, embrace truth. Don't let go of it, regardless of what the pressures that come into your life. And I would like to leave us with these comforting words found in John 10 from Jesus. Jesus said this. He said, "My sheep hear my voice and they follow me." Does that sound like integrity? We hear the voice of Jesus and we follow him. Brothers and sisters, listen to the voice of Jesus and he will show you the way and the truth and the life.